It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And today is Giving Tuesday, a day in which you are likely getting a lot of requests for financial support from nonprofit organizations. Today's meant to be a counterpoint to the significant spending many Americans have been doing over the past few days. Instead of buying more stuff, even for friends and family, the idea of Giving Tuesday is to encourage people to think about and support the communities in which we live. Organizations that are working to make the world a better, safer, and a more fulfilling place, be it homeless shelters, food pantries, youth orchestras, and you knew it was coming to this, right? Your local public radio station. So for the rest of the program, we are going to continue what's become an annual tradition for the 21st Show. We want to pull back the curtain and give you the chance to hear from the team that puts the show together 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year, sharing some of our favorite and most memorable segments from 2024. We're doing this in the hope that it will inspire you to support your local public radio station. You can visit your favorite station's website, and right there at the top of the page is a link that says Donate. I've said this before, but it's not called public radio for nothing. This program, this community we're building, it depends on the public, and that means you. So please, don't wait for another occasion. Go online now and click Donate. It takes a village to make a show like this, so let's hear from some of the people I work with every day putting the 21st Show together. Producers Jose Zepeda, Christine Hatfield, and Anna Casey. And we'll begin with Jose.
So the segment I've chosen this year is one I've worked on over the summer. So with the Summer Olympics quickly approaching, we decided that we wanted to talk with Olympians and Paralympians with ties to Illinois, you know, as they kind of prepare for the games and what they're competing for. And of all the interviews we did, I'd say that my favorite one was with Oksana Masters. Her story is absolutely fascinating, and it's one that I would really recommend you listen to. But I think my favorite moment about our interview with her was that you could actually hear when she became aware that we had local ties to Champaign-Urbana, just as she does. It really changed like the tone of the interview, and you can really hear when she lights up and realizes that she's talking to a local media outlet as opposed to yet another national conglomerate. And it's honestly those moments like that where you really have a deep conversation with guests that make this job just amazing as it is.
So you are adopted, though, and talk about our home station. Our producing station is in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. So when does Champaign come into the picture for you?
Yeah, Champaign-Illinois comes into the picture in 2016-ish. Actually, what brought me out is it was that classic case of chasing, like following a guy, but we were dating and he lived in Champaign and went to school at U of I and is part of the Illinois wheelchair racing track team. He went to school for basketball, the wheelchair basketball and wheelchair track. Aaron Pike, who's also a Paralympic athlete and like me, we met in 2014 in skiing and kind of were dating. And then at 2016, Rio course for me, for my summer sport and cycling was a very similar profile to what it's like in Champaign, which is really flat, long straightaways. And he said, you should come out and train with us. And I did. I had no intentions of moving out here, living here, making Champaign my home at all, but it has been my home since around, I would say like 2017, full time for sure.
Yeah. Champaign is considered.
I'm sorry for those people who are driving in their cars and you have this cyclist that's out there for hours and hours and hours.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because Champaign is considered it's got a long history of being a great place for wheel athletes to yeah. train and compete, right?
Well, was the accessibility, the ADA Act. Everything started in Champaign. So I didn't go to it at the University of Champaign, and I didn't go to school at University of Champaign, but it's been really incredible to, I had no idea, like I had no idea that University of Illinois was in Champaign, but I knew a little bit of the history of the school itself. But in general, the whole Champaign has this robust history of accessibility and were the first person in the wheelchair graduated college, and just a lot of iconic Paralympians in wheelchair racing have come from, and wheelchair basketball have come from the school here in Champaign. And it's kind of like my fiance now, Aaron Pike, as a wheelchair racer, this is the spot for them for the U.S. Paralympic wheelchair track training site. And it's just been absolutely incredible with training in a place where the community itself has a history of accessibility and opportunities and creating and starting the ADA Act and the accessibility rights for individuals with not just physical disabilities, but also cognitive disabilities as well. And that's something I'd never really realized how special this place was until, mm-hmm. and how lucky I was to have what I have until like seeing at Drez where they train and going down like the whole timeline of how the racing chairs transformed, wheelchairs transformed, the individuals who have come through Champaign, Illinois, and how, where it all started, and to know like I have what I have now because of these individuals fought for it and were the first ones to do it. And that's really special to have that train in a community that has that.
Ah, Oksana Masters, the Paralympic athlete based in Central Illinois. We spoke with her over the summer. That clip was selected by Jose Cepeda for this Giving Tuesday program. I'm Brian Mackey. It's the 21st show. We're listening back to excerpts from some of our most memorable conversations in the hopes that it inspires you to support your local public radio station. You can do that by visiting the station website and clicking donate. All right, let's go now to producer Christine Hatfield, who often brings us political-oriented conversations on the program.
We've been very focused this year on what divides us, as tends to happen in election years, of course. But one of the divides that struck me most this year is this question of, should Illinois even stick together as a state? There have been a lot of counties in the past few years that have passed referendums advocating to split off Chicago from the rest of Illinois. Madison County in the Metro East was one of a few counties to do that just this year. But one of the things this show allows us to do is to try and understand those divides, help people to understand where the other side on a debate like this is coming from. So back in April, when this referendum was making headlines, we had on a couple members of the Madison County Board to talk about why they came down on this the way they did. And I thought the answers were enlightening. Take Bob Meyer, who voted in favor of asking the electorate about this, but he said,
"I don't believe it'll ever happen, but I want Springfield to sit up and listen to us." During the meeting, I explained about an EPA regulation they're trying to pass in Springfield, which is verbatim California's EPA regulations. And anything California passes within 6 months, we pass it also. We're our own state. We should be able to look out for ourselves. And they're trying to force these regulations on us. And like the EVs, I'm not against EVs. Let time run their course. I think they'll figure it out, but don't push this stuff on people.
Then there was Allison Lamoth, who voted against putting this to the electorate, and she had some concerns over what that referendum represents.
I can tell you that the people who have been coming to our meetings, for them, this is not just a poll. It's a goal. They want to create a new state that excludes Cook County. They believe that if enough people in enough counties express interest in this, that it will move the initiative forward. So I don't see the point in advocating for a non-binding resolution that promotes division and is based on false assumptions.
You know, this has been such a polarizing story, and what I appreciate is that we on the 21st show were able to slow down and really give people a chance to talk through their differences and explain the significance of all this. It's because we have the chance to break these topics down that I love this work we do so much.
Me too, Christine. Me too. Thank you for that. Let's go now to another of our producers, Anna Casey.
It used to be that the weather was a safe topic of conversation with people across the political spectrum, But recently that has changed, and now even the weather isn't safe from these politically motivated conspiracy theories that we're seeing. So we produced this show after Hurricanes Milton and Helene. Meteorologists around the country had been reporting an uptick in harassment and emails claiming really outlandish things, like the government was controlling the weather. So we produced a show about how even the weather has become a target of misinformation and what we can do about it. We also spoke with Chris Gloninger, a former award-winning TV meteorologist who accepted a job in Iowa at a station where a part of that job would be discussing climate change and his forecasts. But he received so many threats from viewers that he actually left his job in the Midwest last year and went back to the East Coast. So I want to play a piece of that conversation. Here's Brian speaking with Chris about when it clicked for him that it was important to discuss climate change in his weather forecasts and the fallout from that.
Chris, do you remember when it clicked for you that climate change was affecting the big weather events that you were warning people about on television?
Yeah, and that was when I worked for NBC. I was part of a task force that would go and help cover hurricanes. And it was during Hurricane Harvey when my photographer and I were, you know, just covered in rain gear from head to toe. Our camera and our microphone audio equipment were covered in waterproof gear, but yet water found a way in. And right, it was a week's worth of just a deluge. And to know and see those rainfall totals and know that for every 1 degree of warming, the atmosphere holds 7% more moisture. And that's how it manifests. That's how we can see the impacts of climate change. And that's when I went to station management and said, we need to be doing more. That was my aha moment. That's, you know, shifting the focus from what's happening in, you know, with Arctic sea ice or the land glaciers melting seems far away. But this is happening in the United States. We're watching it play out in real time, and the impacts are devastating. So that was my turning point.
Chris, according to a New York Times article about your departure, you were accused by the news director at KCCI of being too, quote unquote, preachy in your forecasts, using the words climate change too much. What's your response to that?
You know, it was funny. I saw just an influx of people saying, you know, you're brought in to do the weather. And I think my moment of affirmation was
stick to
somebody
sports,
that,
right? Like they say for athletes.
Right. When I saw a tweet from a colleague in the industry that went for my job, that interviewed for my job, saying that they wanted somebody to talk about climate change. So I hope they're being supportive of him. And that's the feedback I got. And that's, again, kind of highlights and shows the dangerous times we're in. If we're allowing the people that are helping these conspiracy theories flourish dictate what we cover on the news, they're allowing them to have editorial coverage. And look, I upended a comfortable life in Boston, made a sacrifice, and then to be told not to do something when you were hired to do something, I mean, was unacceptable. So I really didn't have a choice. And it was too big of an issue to stay silent. So that's why I reinvented myself, my career, to make more of a meaningful impact on climate solutions through adaptation and mitigation.
Meteorologist Chris Gloninger, another example of the kind of work we try to do day after day on the 21st Show. Thank you to Anna Casey for that clip and producing that conversation, and Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda as well, and Kulsum Khan for working on our web and social media posts, and Jason Croft and Steve Mork for their technical direction and engineering, and Reginald Hardwick for leading our entire news team. And while I'm on the subject, thanks to Lily and Rick and Kevin and Scott for keeping us on the air, and Kurt for our amazing logo, and Martin for making sure our computers work properly, and Liz for seeing that people know about the work we do, and Troy and Andrew for keeping the website running. And then there are our news colleagues, Kimmy, Jim, and Arjun, May, Emily, and David, and Tanisha, Kennedy, and Zaney. And then there's the business support from Dan and Jan, Nina, Barb, and Moss, who's all of our boss. And don't forget about John and Amanda and Nikki and Aaron for making sure we can afford to stay on air. I'm sorry to everyone I'm leaving out, but we are out of time. This is the team it takes to make public radio, the 21st show, and all the great programming. That's just at our home station. There are many more at your station, too. So please, I hope you'll consider supporting public radio today. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again tomorrow.